Welcome into the Husker 24/7 podcast. I'm Mike Schaefer, joined by Brian Christopherson, Michael Brunt, here on a Tuesday morning. Gentlemen, we have gotten through to the other side of the spring. Does it feel like you've entered a bit of a quiet period as it relates to Nebraska football and athletics? Probably not Brunt's, but maybe more so BC and I.
What's that supposed to mean?
Well,
feels like you've been, that seemed like, didn't it seem like Brunt's, that was maybe a way of saying, feels like you're taking it pretty easy over there, buddy.
Yeah. Are you in a, why didn't you just ask him if he was sitting in a hammock right now?
I was not implying anything. I'm just saying Brunt's is over here covering 13 inning baseball games.
Yes.
And I are drinking Mai Tais by the pool.
Yeah. He's covering Noblesse bats over here, and that's for the next segment, I know. But yeah, I guess so. You're right. I mean, this is sort of, I'm on jury duty next week, and I've agreed to do it. So I've decided
the podcast is going to be exciting next week. BC is going to be spilling the beans on his jury duty.
Yeah, I should do it from the little break room there, their little coffee room. See if we can arrange it like when they give us like a 20-minute session to get a snack. We could pound something out. I could give you some case specifics.
When it comes time to deliberate, just duck out and do a quick segment of the podcast. Let us know how things are going.
Juror number four thinks he's guilty, but I don't.
Do you have your paperback novel picked out that you're going to take while you wait? It's a lot of waiting.
It does seem like it has to be a paperback novel that the juror always has. Like in the movie, there's somebody who has it, and it's never a hardcover book that they're reading.
And it's frequently like a Harlequin romance novel. I think you need to take a romance novel, perhaps thematic in some way for what you're going to be doing there. Like, I don't know. What's a good Harlequin romance novel title for like judge and jury? No,
I don't. Yeah. I mean, that works for me. You also recommended me watching Pauly Shore's movie Jury Duty as prep study. So I'll get that work in too.
That took me down a very dark and sad Pauly Shore rabbit hole last week. So I would probably not put Jury Duty in my top three of Pauly Shore movies.
Was Google or YouTube, was a search box, did it respond, are you sure? Like when you type that in?
The references, like you would have had to have lived through the OJ trial to get probably half of the references that are in the trailer of Jury Duty.
It was right mid-90s basically then?
It was basically like some writer probably in the midst of watching the OJ trial very haphazardly threw together a script, thought we need to get Pauly Shore on this vehicle, and that's how that movie was made.
You said it was a top three Pauly Shore movie, and I could only name Encino Man. So that the fact that you could name three Pauly Shore movies is impressive.
You have seen more Pauly Shore movies than you're willing to admit. I can assure you of this.
Probably.
I mean, you've seen the classic Biodome, I'm sure.
I don't think so. Don't think so.
Well, that's definitely in Brunt's top three list.
Biodome was on that, and Encino Man. In the Army Now was also a Pauly Shore movie.
I think I did see that one.
Son-in-Law.
Yeah, Son-in-Law. Trying to think who else.
There's a lot of mileage to be gained by being Mitzi Shore's son, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's any other big ones that come to mind immediately. I don't think so. There's probably somebody listening to this podcast right now screaming at the whatever device they're listening on that we're missing a Pauly Shore movie. Maybe not.
Or several saying, stop talking about Pauly Shore.
Get on with it.
You guys aren't going to believe this, but this is at least the second time in the last 2 months that I've been talking about Pauly Shore for over 5 minutes. So it's a topic that is just on the airwaves right now.
It's a quiet time. Quiet time brings you to Pauly Shore.
Pauly Shore is not a quiet man though. So,
All right. So I've got a question for you.
A football
related question to get us on topic here.
This isn't a wheel question.
No, I, I, the wheel's staying in the closet for now. I'll break it out in the summer, though. That's a summertime wheel. So Nebraska is now done with spring football, as you know. Who on that roster do you feel differently about now than you did at the end of March, start of April, when things got rolling?
Go ahead, Schaefer.
I have a couple of them, but I'll only say one because I don't want to take anything from anybody. But the easy one for me would be Gabe Irvin, because I didn't have him in my Super Six. I thought he was an interesting guy, but I didn't think that he was going to be someone that was going to have a big role in the 2021 season. I felt like Nebraska went and got Marquise Stepp in part because they didn't love exactly what they had in the running back room, and they needed a little bit more experience, which I thought would come, at some of the playing time that Irvin might have had in a year in which you don't take a transfer running back. And he did the most important thing you can do in the spring. He was healthy, which meant he got to be there and got a ton of reps, and he produced when he got those reps. And you hear Ryan Held and Scott Frost talk about him, and they refer to him as dependable, reliable, someone that they feel comfortable with running all parts of the offense, someone that isn't afraid to step into any kind of situation and do what he can do. And he showed them that he can handle it physically, but also that there's a maturity and a mental level there that, frankly, I think if you read between the lines, Nebraska hasn't had a lot of that in their running back room at times. So I think they were really impressed with Gabe Irvin, and therefore I came away impressed with Gabe Irvin. And that's a guy that is probably going to look like a big miss for me when I go back and I assess how I rank that 2021 group, because I don't know if I had him in the top 10 players, and he might be the guy who plays the most right off the bat.
That's a good one. Omar Manning, just the fact that in the couple Saturdays we were able to go over there, we see him running around and he's like, okay, yeah, he's legit. Like, he's got the size and the way he breaks on the ball and can go get it. He's got all the tools. And I'm not saying I'm not in the crowd that wants to see this. You want to be like in the middle of August and he's out there every day and the same stuff's happening. That part has to occur. But right now it's okay to be positive that we didn't sort of know where that thing was. And it was kind of hazy all of last fall and winter. And there he was at the spring game running a 50-yard route and he dropped it, but I think you saw the possibilities there at least. And so that I think it was very encouraging that he sort of not only developed and was out there, but he was out there with the top unit in the first series. And that tells you something.
There was one guy that I felt like all spring, a lot of the focus was rightly on the offensive side of the ball with all the questions that they had there, especially the skill positions. And, defense was just a deep group that, you've got a lot of veterans and it's seemingly trending in the right direction. But the one guy who I think really stood out to me just for how different he looked and, because of that, the potential that he has is Damian Daniels. Mm. He looks significantly different physically than he did the last time we got to see him. And maybe had kind of transformed things a little bit last fall, but obviously we weren't around. But, throughout his career, Daniels has kind of flashed at times where you're like, holy crap, this is like a perfect 3-4 nose and a guy that can be really dominant. But, he hasn't been able to, stay on the field for long stretches of time because of the conditioning stuff. I think he still benefited from his brother being here for a year and kind of transformed himself that way. But, if he's a guy that you can get more snaps out of, I think he can be a really big force for that defense in the middle. And they've got options there, but Brian, I think you'll agree with me that when he, came out to talk at the end of spring, it was like, everybody kind of jokes about the nickname Snacks, but he really did look like a completely different person.
He's done with Snacks.
Yeah, Snacks is dead.
Yeah.
Did the Nebraska media kill snacks?
The Nebraska media asked too much about snacks, probably.
Yeah, it came out that people, for whatever reason, just really wanted to make it a thing and ask him about it. And then I think he had to bury it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, and, you know, it also, I mean, there was a point in his career, he gave the numbers. He was like 340 plus at one point in his career, and he's leaving the spring was about 315 and had lost 15 pounds. And Bruns is absolutely right. When you stood next to him, it was so obvious. Like, he's just a different looking guy. And he had sort of, I think, put to bed the narrative last fall that he couldn't be a, I don't know if every down guy, but he could go 45 snaps against Iowa. It wasn't like he had to tap out after 15 snaps anymore. And so now I think he can maybe even take that a step further. And, you know, 45 snaps can be an every week occurrence, maybe. I don't know. And then you throw in some Jordan Riley, some Nash Huttmacher. You can move some other guys in there. You've got a nice little rotation at that spot going. I think that's a very good answer. I'd throw one other one out there. He didn't come up a lot this spring, but the more I heard about his story last fall, Fildarius Payne is a guy I'm really curious about now, just because, I mean, he caught COVID before last season, right after he got here, lost a lot of weight. I think he was dealing with another injury he was coming back from. So he really had no lead up time and was sick before camp began. And he was still out there the first game against Ohio State at a different position. And he made a couple plays against the Buckeyes. And you're kind of like, oh, this is a guy to watch. And that was with like no runway. And so I'm pretty interested to see what he can do now that he has a full runway and what that looks like.
Get anybody else, Schaefer?
Yeah, I got one. I'm surprised no one said this yet, but I don't think any of us were talking about Matt Sichterman at the end of March, and he may not be the guy that ends up with the job necessarily when we get to the Illinois game, but he certainly emerged more in the conversation than some of the other names that we were discussing at that time. And it's still a very open battle, but it's nice to see a guy that – remember Matt Sichterman day, Brunts? When Mike Kavanaugh and everyone were wearing his number on a shirt during a practice because he was visiting.
I believe the only players that had their own days on visits, it was him and Jody Lewis, right?
Yeah, yeah. Two very different careers.
Yes. they certainly went in opposite directions at some point, yes.
So, you know, I think that it's a good thing for Matt Sichterman. That's, we get a lot of people who wonder sometimes what happens to these guys when they don't necessarily become the players that you expect that they're going to be within 2 years in the program. And sometimes it takes a little time. You got to develop, you got to mature a little bit. And Sichterman seems very comfortable with who he is and what he's doing and the time that he's put in. And I think that it stands out to Greg Austin and to that offensive line room right now. And so, again, will he be the starter? I don't know. But that wasn't a guy I was talking about when we were talking Nebraska's offensive line and what we wanted to see this spring. And so I feel like that's certainly someone worth bringing up.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think he's going to start the opener. I mean, Banksy could push him, but I actually think he's got a leg up right now.
I got one other one. I think this was my own kind of bias, I guess, that I was being really kind of, I wasn't wanting to drink the Kool-Aid before seeing and hearing things, but I think that Samori Toure, is going to be a huge factor for Nebraska. I mean, that became obvious after seeing him in practice and in the spring game. I think there was part of me that was a little skeptical about the FCS level production, even though, you know, it was there obviously, but you know, he's every bit of 6'3". He is, you know, the fact that he can play in the slot, I think, is huge because it allows you to, you know, keep the other bigger wide receivers on the field with him. And, you know, he's that kind of guy too, that, you know, I think he has a good view of kind of what's ahead of him. I think that he's been able to adjust to things pretty easily. I mean, he just seems like a guy that, that gets it. So I was going into the spring thinking, okay, you know, maybe he pushes a little bit here or there, but I mean, I think he's probably, you know, Nebraska's top two wide receiver right now. I mean, just based on the fact that, you know, we don't really know what Omar Manning's situation is going to be come fall. And, you know, Oliver Martin's probably right there in that conversation too. But I was really impressed with, you know, everything I saw from him this spring.
Yeah, Toure just immediately on that Saturday of the spring game was the first time that I had eyes on him. And I mean, just you can tell he looks more like a receiver than Nebraska's had in some time. And I know that's such a dumb statement to say, but he just looked fluid. He looked comfortable. He ran routes over the middle. I feel like he's going to be a pretty helpful player for Adrian Martinez. I don't know that he's going to put up Stanley Morgan's numbers from 2018, but I expect him, if healthy, to be Nebraska's leading receiver this year. Here's a name. I'm surprised no one said it, and I don't know how much he'll factor into 2021 at all, but did any of us expect Heinrich Harburg to make this big of a jump in his first spring?
No, he looked better than I thought he would, just throwing the ball. And I wasn't down on him as a prospect, but I thought it would take a year or so for some of his tools to be evident. And he picked things up pretty quickly, it sounds like. I don't know how that race stands. It's hard to I think there's sort of an outside view that Harburg could be number two. I wouldn't write off Logan Smothers too quickly in that conversation, but I completely agree that Harburg has given him something to think about, and probably his progress is maybe part of the reason they might just stand pat at quarterback, because they feel like between Smothers and Harburg, they can have two guys where give them until August and they can be capable backup guys. And I think that's sort of where they're at right now.
Yeah. I think that's kind of how I feel about it. I mean, I liked Harburg a lot watching him in high school. It's just, I felt like there was a lot he was going to have to get used to and adjust to going from a C1 school to Big Ten football. But he has such physical gifts that it's still going to take some time. And I think, you know, if Nebraska has their way, he's only playing in mop-up duty in 2021. But he's certainly someone that I am more excited about what it could look like in 2022 than I thought he was going to be a two-year guy. Like you were talking 2023 at the earliest. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that way anymore. And I think he had a nice spring as well. Brunch, any final names you want to throw out there?
One young guy that I think always gets a lot of intrigue from fans, just because, I mean, he was a four-star guy and, you know, it didn't really have much of a senior year of high school, Blaze Gunnarsson. He had that kind of flash play in the spring game against Turner Corcoran. I thought that seeing him in practices, he's a member of the all bus team. I mean, he looks like the type of outside linebacker that a school like Wisconsin would trot out, and he would just terrorize Big Ten teams for 2 or 3 years. Obviously a very full depth chart at those spots this season and even, you know, next year too a little bit, but I think I was curious to see how he looked moving around because of the past hip issues, and I thought that, you know, he looks like a guy that with more development could help Nebraska.
The young D lineman did well too. Guys who aren't going to play this year, but Buckley and Marquise Black, I think had good springs, and they played pretty well in the spring game when I kind of went back and watched it a little bit, and Huttmacher did also. So kind of to that theme, there's this group of guys who they don't have to force into the circle this year. Obviously those guys would love to be there, but it's a better spot than Nebraska's been at defensively in a while, where we have seen guys get forced in there before they should be. I think of DeAndre Thomas always. Like, being out there right away, playing the nose like in week two. And he just wasn't meant to do that at that point. And that it's, you know, it's different right now with guys where they have a couple years to sort of figure things out and work their way in to get like 8 to 10 snaps, maybe a game, and then go from there. So that's a positive.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That defensive line group, I mean, they didn't have to use many guys last year, so they could get by with Ty Robinson, Casey Rogers, Ben Stilley, Damian Daniels for the most part, but they actually have some pretty good depth there. And I'm imagining in a full season, we're going to see more of them going forward as well too. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to discuss Nebraska baseball. They got a big upcoming weekend series against Northwestern. They just took 3 out of 4 in the dumbest pod that's ever existed in all time. Brunts will explain why the Big Ten put teams in a place that doesn't have lights. It, you know, doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but Brunts probably has the answers to that. And we'll dive into where Nebraska baseball sits with a couple big series left.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
And we are back. You are listening to the show that loves to talk about knobless bats. Brunts, here's a couple, you know, take as much time as you need to explain the concept of a knobless bat, why it's illegal, and why the hell anyone has one.
Well, I mean, can we just talk about the seventh inning of yesterday's baseball game with the Rutgers? I mean, that
we absolutely can.
Because we'll get to the knobs, because the knobs played a pretty key role in the just stupidity of the seventh inning in that game. So Nebraska's playing on a 4-game pod with Rutgers, for those that don't know, or they just finished it up. Nebraska scores 6 runs in the first inning, and then the offense basically goes cold. It's 6-3 going into the seventh inning, Nebraska leading. And within that inning, I want to make sure I get everything correct here. So Nebraska is in the field. Rutgers is batting, and just thinking about it now, it's just unbelievable that this happened. Let me get my list here. So Nebraska gets a strikeout, and catcher Griffin Everett throws to first base, and they catch the Rutgers base runner off of first base, and he's tagged out. The umpires decide to get together and talk for 2 or 3 minutes about what happened, and decided that there was interference on the play, and award the Rutgers hitter or runner second base because of the interference. It was a total, you know, nothing play that happens probably 10 times whenever there's a sliding runner and the ball coming to the same base. And a guy from across the infield decides that it was actually interference. So the inning moves on. They end up getting another runner on base. So you've got first and second. And also in that inning, the home plate umpire called a strike because he said that the Rutgers batter did not get out of the way of a pitch that hit him. But the problem was, is that the pitch didn't actually hit the batter. So that happened. And then later, a Rutgers hitter grounds out, which would have been the third out of the inning, had the interference call not been made. And come to find out, the guy's bat did not have a knob on the bottom. So he was using an illegal bat, something that Nebraska pointed out. The guy's called out. Both runners are sent back to their previous bases. And then the next at bat, Rutgers hits a 3-run home run to tie the game. And then it ultimately goes into 13 innings with Nebraska winning. So in a span of about 5 minutes, you had just an absolute terrible call on the base pass, a horrible call at home plate, a knobless bat being used, and a 3-run home run. So that was basically the way that Monday went. And Nebraska ended up winning by using 15 position players, 9 pitchers, and just scoring the winning run before they had to leave to go to the airport because of the curfew. So
how did you feel about the strike call on the pitch that Bryce Matthews stole second on?
I'm trying to remember it.
Because Nick Hanley was just out of his mind about it.
Yeah,
I saw the pitch. It was absolutely terrible.
Yeah, right? No, it was just like
in the batter's box of the left-handed hitter.
Yeah, I mean, it was totally like, as much as Kansas City Royals fans were just losing their minds about how bad Angel Hernandez was last week, like, this crew just completely surpassed that. So, long story short, Nebraska wins the game. They go 3-1 in New Jersey in that pod, and including one win over Indiana. They split with Indiana, so after being swept last weekend at home by Rutgers, Nebraska was able to right the ship a little bit, which is a positive with, you know, this week being the week when they're going to select the 20 potential host sites and whittle that down to 16 for the start of the NCAA tournament. But, you know, there's a lot of hand-wringing, you know, people kind of climbing up on the ledge about Nebraska baseball last weekend. And, you know, they found a way to get it done in a pretty difficult pod in New Jersey.
Here is the Nebraska – or not Nebraska. Here's the Big Ten baseball standings as it sits right now.
Are you reading them off the Big Ten site?
Is it wrong?
I you might want to check their accuracy because they don't get updated all the time.
Okay, so what site should I use?
I think D1 baseballs are generally correct. So
silly me trying to use the conference site for their standings. Especially for a sport like baseball, which
these actually do look correct. They have been updated.
All right, so I'm going to go back to it because I know it.
Yeah.
So you have Indiana at 23-10. You have Nebraska at 23-11. You have Michigan at 23-12. You have Iowa at 21-14. You have Maryland at 21-14. Nebraska has played 4 of those schools. They've only played Indiana twice, and they have a series against Michigan coming up. They're currently in second place. And then you have Ohio State and Rutgers. Rutgers, despite series wins over Nebraska and Michigan, is just 17-17 on the year. This certainly seems like a conference where it'd be really nice if there was a Big Ten baseball tournament and if these teams had the opportunity to play out of conference games, because it's been pretty competitive this year. Despite the fact that, you know, the Big Ten tried to neuter its own conference.
It's actually worked out pretty well for the Big Ten, all things considered, because you do have a group of teams that have separated themselves. Like the Big Ten right now is a 3-bid league with Iowa and Maryland kind of knocking on the door. And I think Maryland, I believe Maryland has an easier road into the clubhouse and the rest of the schools, so maybe Iowa too, but they're probably going to get 4 teams in. So it actually, in spite of all of the stupidity of the Big Ten with the way that they handled this baseball year, it might actually end up working out. I have to say, though, after just the absolute crap storm of yesterday's game, I could only imagine if, you know, Nebraska and Rutgers had to play in a Big Ten tournament with, you know, like elimination on the line, because I don't think that there's a ton of love lost between these two teams. You kind of got that sense in Lincoln that it was running a little hot, And then you had the way that yesterday kind of went, just throw gas on that too. So it's a shame that we're not going to get to see that again. But yeah, I do think that it's actually shaping up okay for the Big Ten in spite of everything that they tried to do this year.
Does Nebraska baseball have a baseball rival in the conference? Because the closest for me would be like Michigan, but that's largely just because Jack Blomgren lost his mind several times. I can't think of the guy from Minnesota, third baseman, whose name played for Nebraska. Cannot think of his name.
Altavilla?
Yes. He played into it a lot too. That's the closest I can think of like, you know, there's a little bit of a history there. I would like Nebraska baseball to have like a, you know, a bit of a back and forth with a team.
I think a few years ago, I would have said like Indiana or Ohio State. Like it seemed like Nebraska and Ohio State always played really tight games when there was like something on the line.
Nebraska walked them off three straight times that one year.
Yeah. Like I don't think that there's just one team that like Nebraska just gets after. My sense is that Nebraska probably doesn't have a lot of fans around the conference because they're not afraid to chirp a little bit. I think that gets noticed. Like, so I think that's probably the best way to put it. I don't think there's necessarily one team that I would identify, but they're a scrappy bunch. They play a little red ass at times, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, well, that kind of describes their coach, so I think that kind of fits to a team.
Yeah, and it's totally fine to play that way as long as you can back it up.
Yeah.
What do they have to do, you think, Bruns, with 10 games left? I know, obviously, you want to win the conference. It's there. You can grab it. Go get it. But let's put that aside for a second. I've always thought if this – I don't know. Did you think this team was going to make the tournament before the year started? I mean, I feel like that you're playing with house money when you get there for this season. That would be just amazing after the COVID thing if they were just in the tournament. But what do they have to do in the last 10 games to just lock up a bid there, you think, and not just fall off the cliff and lose that?
Yeah, I mean, so Northwestern is coming up this weekend. They've had COVID issues and haven't played the last two weekends. I think that week should that series should be played. We'll see, but I mean, you got to win that series for sure. Sweep would be great. Then you have another pod in Bloomington where you've got two against Indiana, two against Ohio State. I think if you split that and you take one or two against Michigan to end the season, I mean, I think that's a pretty good, you know, finish. I mean, a 7-3, 6-4 finish, I think you'd be fine, depending on what those four losses are. So we'll see. But, I mean, Nebraska does have a chance, you know, to win the damn thing with who they play. So, with the way that the top – three teams are scheduled going into the finish. I mean, you could see, you know, quite a bit of change in the standings because, I mean, a lot of the better teams still have to play the other better teams.
Yeah, it'd be special if that last weekend you have, like, a three-way tie going into it. I mean, that'd be a lot of fun.
But, yeah. I mean, and, you know, you've got Michigan at home. I mean, I can only imagine what that atmosphere is going to be like. Although it is kind of –
Shades of 2019, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess that it is kind of odd that first Friday game against Michigan's at noon. You'd kind of like that to be like a 6:30 start if you could.
People will go, though. They'll have a big crowd for that still.
People will come, Ray.
They will. People will come.
All right. Well, off of that impersonation, it might be time for us to go. Any closing thoughts here?
Yes, just one. Make sure there's a knob on your bat.
What's the advantage of not having one?
I don't know. A lot of guys, Schaefer mentioned this off air, but I mean, I know a lot of guys, at least in the pros, are going to the axe, which is kind of like the half knob. But the guy that had the knobless bat Richie Schikoffer had been 2-for-3 in that game before before the bat was discovered, or at least the umpires were notified. So,
did he protest it strongly, or?
I think it was more disbelief that that was happening, but yeah, I don't know. He didn't go like George Brett Pintar on it.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't need to keep it going. I'll ask more questions about the knob off the air. Anyway, wrap it up.
With that, we are pleased to give you everything we have here today with the Husker 24/7 podcast. Anything extra you can find at Husker 24/7. We have recruiting stuff still going. We have baseball coverage. We have football coverage. I know that we're going to start rolling. It's dangerously close to list season. And I think we're inching towards starting our own. So we're going to have some series and some good content for people here the rest of the month. So be sure to check that out. And we will be back with you next time here at the Husker 24/7 podcast.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.